while thousands of homes and businesses between Maryland and Maine are without power as wind storms rip through the Northeast. Weather officials say some areas saw wind gusts as high as 70 miles an hour. Two people have been killed. This is SRN News.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but the religious right is so dangerous in America today, especially when they're emboldened by their commander-in-chief, George W. Bush. And lately, you have heard so much from this Christian who leads our country. He even has prayer meetings at the White House, and he seeks God in prayer when he wants direction. That makes him as bad as Osama bin Laden. Maybe even worse, maybe, just maybe, Osama didn't even do anything wrong. Because lately you have been hearing not only about Bush's flaws and mistakes as far as Iraq is concerned, that much is a given, you have also been hearing all kinds of conspiracy theories about what truly happened on 9/11. Maybe we were not attacked by Muslim extremists after all, supposing the Bush administration created the 9/11 catastrophe by destroying the World Trade Center and most of the Pentagon themselves, just like Hitler burned the Reichstag building and blamed it on the communists so that he could come into full dictatorial power, just like Emperor Palpatine in Star Wars created a conflict with the rebellion so that he could take over the Republic, up to the point where the Republic was no longer a republic and became a dictatorship, an empire, an evil empire, the very same empire that would later on strike back in another Star Wars movie. Maybe we are experiencing the horror of an empire right in our very own midst. Well, we have a guest today who is going to debunk every one of these popular 9/11 myths. He will do it by applying something we don't find on a lot of websites or special downloadable video clips, a long-lost forgotten art called common sense. Steve Koshard is a very intelligent man, and we are honored to have him. But the most intelligent thing he ever did, I think, probably, was marry my co-host and producer of the Bob Siegel Show, Sharon Koshard. And so if you study up and work hard like Steve, you too can marry my co-host, Sharon, or at least somebody like Sharon. Say hello to Sharon Koshard.
Steve would agree with that, by the way, that it was the most intelligent thing he did.
He would. Well, since he's on the show today, Sharon, we might want to just let Steve speak
for
himself.
No, I think I can just speak for
him. Well, right now
I'm
hearing you say that. I want to hear Steve say it.
No comment.
Well, those two words just spoke volumes. That was our guest, Steve Koshard. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, Steve, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Bob. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you here. A lot of people don't realize Steve's here a lot. He does a lot of engineering for us. He even plays parts. This is Professor Educated, who's been one of our recurring characters. And Steve is a very educated person. And Sharon, tell us a little bit about your husband's qualifications. Other than the fact that he's your husband, why is he qualified to debunk some of these 9/11 myths?
Well, one of the things you just mentioned was the fact that he was an engineer. For us, Now, he was a different kind of engineer when he was trained at Penn State University. He was trained as a structural engineer, graduated with honors in, what, 1976 or 77?
Steve Lehman.
I graduated before
honors?
You.
What, course. A C-plus is considered an honor?
Then he went on to design the grand, not just him, but he was part of Bechtel Power Corporation and designing the new nuclear power plant at Grand Gulf.
No, that's nuclear.
Nuclear.
Yes, nuclear.
And then was involved with the Limerick Power Plant in Pennsylvania. So,
well, now you're leaving off something very important.
What's
because
that?
One of the things related to 9/11, now I'm no engineer, but the word planes, airplanes comes to my mind when I think of 9/11. And your husband is
yeah,
a pilot.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
And
a
the
pilot.
Office for your web studio is there at the hangar. And mm-hmm. I've even been up in the plane. And Steve also drives a Corvette. Was it 63?
65.
65. It is one. See, I'm getting more excited about the Corvette. But the real point is that Steve is a pilot. And I've even flown with him, so I can testify to that myself. Well, Steve, what are some of the different – I hear all kinds of theories. Let's why don't you start with one, some nut keg theory that you've heard, and tell us why it is so nutty. And I guess I should say, I know that there are people who listen to this show who may believe these theories sincerely. And if you do, we mean no disrespect, but it might be a nutty theory. Doesn't mean you. Sharon's looking at me like she means disrespect. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I thought you were going to say something a little negative about anybody that would believe in a conspiracy theory.
You thought I was, but yes. I surprised you.
You
I said that
totally
I, that
surprised
I had,
me.
Well, because I think that well-meaning, sincere people sometimes get mm-hmm. caught up in nonsense.
Ignorant, though.
I do believe these are nonsensical theories. I believe mm-hmm. you could be intelligent and get some disinformation, particularly with the internet. Mm-hmm. You go and you get on some website and you think you
and
know
they're very
everything.
Convincing, I think,
well,
those
you know,
theories.
They're well-designed, and boy, it was E.B. White who wrote Charlotte's Web who said it years ago, that anything that people see in print, they'll believe. Fortunately, the other side of the internet is you can always find another website that will challenge it. Okay, so we've given enough disclaimers. Steve, give us a wacko theory.
Wacko theory. Okay.
A wacko theory that's sincere but whacked out people might believe it. Yes, okay. That has something to do with 9/11.
Well, first, I have to take back a little bit of what you said, but I'm not going to debunk all the theories.
I said all the popular theories.
All the popular.
Okay. I was very careful how I said that.
Okay, well, popular or not, okay. I can't debunk all of them. I want to just kind of be focused on the things that I know.
Okay.
Because if I start going off track and into other areas, I'm just as bad as the conspiracy people themselves.
That's true, and it's hard to keep track of them. Someone could develop a unicorn theory, and we can't.
You're just going to stay in your realm of expertise.
That's very good.
Wow. Yes.
What's the old phrase? Better to be silent and thought the fool than speak and remove all doubt.
Right. Well, I'm definitely the fool, but there are a few areas that I know about. So let's see. One of the things that was most interesting was, in the things that I've heard, had to do with all the steel melting from the fire from the jet. And the theorists said that, you know, there was no melted steel found. Well, that's right. No, there wasn't. That's because no steel melted. But the point is, the steel doesn't have to melt in order for the thing to fall down. Mm-hmm. Okay, it has to get weaker. Okay, so
we call that fatigue.
Fatigue. Well, I guess thermal fatigue, possibly. Yeah. Okay. So actually, what happens is as steel gets heated, it loses its strength. Okay. So when we design something, we being structural engineers, and we design something, there's a kind of built-in safety factor of everything we do of around 50% or so. And when you do this, you're designing for certain loads. And, of course, everybody knows that it was designed for a 707 banging into it and so forth. And it was designed, you know, for the structural impact of a 707 slamming into the building. And as you can see, it actually withstood that. Mm-hmm. It was still standing.
It was pretty amazing to see those things standing for any amount of time
at all.
Yeah,
with those big giant holes in there.
Absolutely.
And those big giant holes meant that there was columns missing and trusses missing. And
yeah, it's not like some
missing.
Kid's scooter ran into the building.
Yeah,
these things were big American United planes.
Right. So it did a pretty good job of that. Unfortunately, these things were loaded for cross-country flight, and this is where the pilot thing comes in. You know, they put a lot of fuel in those babies in order to get them all the way across the country nonstop. They may not be fueled to the top, but there's a lot of fuel they burn when they come all the way across the country, and that's how much they spilled into the World Trade Center. So when that fuel ignited, it started the fire, obviously. And as the fire continued, the steel started to lose strength. Okay. So at 1100 degrees or so, okay, and we can get close to 1100 degrees with our outside pizza oven.
Okay.
Okay. Just burning oak. So here we have
thin
jet
crust
fuel.
Or thick crust?
Well, either one.
Either one.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So we can get to about 900 out there. The steel loses about 20% or so of its 50%. I'm sorry, of its strength when it hits 1100 degrees.
Wow.
Okay. And that would happen pretty quickly, mainly because a lot of the fireproofing had been taken off of the steel and so forth. So there were pieces of steel that were exposed directly to flames. So it would lose 50% of its strength. Now, what does that 50% represent? It kind of represents the safety factor we put in there, right? So now we could take the literal straw or the proverbial straw and put it on the top of the World Trade Center, and our load factor and safety factors are gone. That thing's ready to fall.
Okay, debunking the famous myths of 9/11 that somehow the Bush administration did a demolition and that the planes couldn't have knocked them over. Our special guest, Steve Kishard. You are listening to The Bob Siegel Show at News Talk 1170. We'll be right back.
Admit it, to be successful these days, you need a website. And if you don't have one, you'll be like my friend Arnold, who finally switched from a manual to an electric typewriter when everyone else already had a personal computer. And the day I tried to talk him into a website, just listen in.
Forget it, too expensive.
Then how are you going to market your company? People need information.
There's still a device called a telephone.
Telephone? You're talking like Fred Flintstone. How are they going to see your logo, your graphics and pictures, your store?
There's a lovely brochure that we send out.
Have you any idea how much money you spend every year to print these brochures?
Yeah, right. How about the cost of having a website hosted? Not to mention the time, the complicated software, the hiring of a designer.
All of those difficulties are removed when you use Web Studio.
That name sounds familiar.
Web Studio is a website design software. It enables you to create your own pages in minutes without hiring a designer. All you do is use your mouse to drag and drop images and text. Then it saves the pages for you on the internet. The program includes 14 design galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and anything else you need.
I didn't know it could be so easy and quick. Maybe it is time for me to step into the 20th century.
Arnold, it's the 21st century. For information on Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Townhall.com is your website for the very best in conservative opinion. Free podcasts of radio shows from your favorite hosts, including Bennett, Gallagher, Medved, and more. Townhall.com has a dozen online shows, like the VFW's National Defense, offering the soldiers' point of view on the war on terror, or TSC Daily's What's the Big Idea, which tears apart liberals' off-the-wall ideas. And get the latest on the culture war from Jay Sekulow Live. Check out all of Townhall.com's online radio today. Go right now to Townhall.com.
Welcome back to News Talk 1170 KCBQ. This is Bob Siegel and Sharon Kishard, as always, but also Steve Kishard, a pilot and just a litany of other credentials in the field of engineering that we won't list again because they're so impressive. There isn't time to list them again. And Steve, you were talking about the way the steel, the accusation that no melted steel was found in the World Trade Center, and you were explaining that the steel didn't have to melt.
Right.
Why don't you just recap a little bit of that for those that just jumped in?
So when we last left our story here, we had a fire going at 1,100 degrees, and 50% of the what are you laughing at?
50% about pizza.
Yeah, he gave an analogy of pizza before. Sharon's thinking about pizza now. She's long since forgotten 9/11.
Would you like fries with that? So we were at 1,100 degrees. 50% of the strength of the steel has now been sapped from it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, as the temperature goes up, they say that it reached the maximum temperature of 1,830-some degrees. Okay. At 1,800 degrees, steel has lost 90% of its strength.
So it's not holding anything up anymore.
It's not holding anything up, no. And in the process of doing that, it has been expanding the whole time as well. Okay, so this the way that the World Trade Center was built was basically no columns in the floors, or not in the floors, no columns in the way of the floors so that they could put more and more people and so forth in there. So there was a kind of a tube that went up the center, and the exterior of it acted as another tube. So they were the main two structural pieces of it, basically two pieces of tubes, which are extremely strong. So what happens is they have these steel trusses and steel beams that go from the center part out to the outside parts, okay? Those things are really long. So as the steel heats up, it starts to expand along its axis there, and it starts to push things out of the way, like the inner tube and like the outer tube. Okay, so it's starting to push everything, and things are starting to break.
Okay, the vertical, the horizontal axes that you're talking about are pushing. The longitudinal are pushing the latitudinal ones out of the way?
Well, they're pushing the columns, and they're pushing the concrete beam or concrete tube that makes up the elevator shafts and so on in the center of the building. Okay, so as it's pushing all that stuff out of the way, another thing is happening, and that is the columns start to lose their support. Okay, these vertical columns, all the load on the outside of the building is going down these columns. And if you ever took a straw, okay, Bob, the last time you had an ice cream soda,
right?
That was
chocolate malt, not too long ago.
It was about an hour ago. Yeah, so
not an hour ago, push, but not too long ago.
When you push on a straw, okay,
it starts to bend.
It'll buckle right in the middle.
Right.
Right. Okay. Now, if you put two fingers there,
that's right.
You give it a little support
open.
Right in the center. Yeah, you can put
you
a lot more load.
You squeeze it hard.
On.
You just kind of hold it gently.
Yeah, and it'll hold a lot more load.
That's
right?
True.
Well, as these beams started to push out and break their connections to the columns,
no one was holding the straw.
That's right. Nobody was holding the straw. So now the columns have lost an enormous amount of their load carrying capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So as the steel starts to melt, not to melt, as the steel starts to weaken, things start to get pushed out, and eventually the whole thing just comes down. Simply because the steel lost its strength and the columns lost their ability to hold up the load.
What about the theory, Steve, that there were bombs planted in the bottom or in the lobby because it looked like it was a demolition, much like demolitionists would put bombs, you know, strategically in a building to bring it down?
Yeah, well, my understanding is that came from the jet fuel. As the jet went through the building, it did take out some of the concrete walls in the central core. Okay, and as that happened, of course, jet fuel, which, you know, tens of thousands of gallons of jet fuel floating around in there, it started to go down the shaft.
The jet fuel?
Yeah, the jet fuel, yeah. And, of course, it was ignited as well. You know, so it was flaming as it's going down the shafts. And all of the debris from the tube is going down there, and you've got the fire. And when it hits the bottom, it all splashes out. And I guess there were some reports from some of the, I guess, a film crew who had been there that filmed a lot of this stuff. For some of the early documentaries that we saw, they actually saw people coming, the doors opening, and people coming out of there in flames, and you know the shaft was on fire. Yeah.
Wow. Now, when,
so,
when people
oh,
talk
and
about
the other wait, one other thing about that, about the bombs in the lobby and so on, if there was bombs on the ground floor that were detonated, more than likely one would think that the building would start its collapse in the lobby. As opposed
here's
to like
Steve Cushard making the obvious.
As opposed to the 84th floor.
In 1993 there was a bomb. No, I don't think it was the lobby. But what floor was it in 93?
It was down in the parking garage. Yeah.
And so now that wasn't planned as a demolition, but there was a bomb that did blast from the bottom, and it didn't do anything.
Right. And actually, what they were trying to do is they were trying to take out the outside columns, I believe, because. There is a wall down there in the basement that holds back the river. And they were trying to take that out so the whole thing would just implode on itself.
Now I know you're commenting mostly as an engineer, but I want to understand this theory a little bit. They're claiming that there was a demolition. So what do they say about the fact that New York's a pretty crowded city, that people were going to work, that hundreds and hundreds of people worked at the World Trade Center?
Mm-hmm.
I know it was only around 9 in the morning and not everybody was there, but... So who's going in and putting in these? Did they do it at night?
So,
was it a secret?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it just seems so preposterous to me that people would even take that seriously.
Yeah. Well, it had to happen under the veil of absurdity, because the when you do a demolition on a building, you just don't like throw some dynamite in there and a thing comes down. These guys spend months, first of all, going over all the structural design to find out how all the loads are distributed across the building. What are the key columns, the key beams, and so forth,
right.
in order to make it implode the way they want it to implode, so that nobody gets hurt on the outside and so on. And in order to actually execute on that, after they do all the planning, they bring in jackhammers, diamond saws, impact hammers, compressors, all kinds of equipment that makes lots of noise, and it makes lots of dirt. And normally, when they start doing one of these things, there's no one in the building because the building has basically been taken apart.
Yes.
It's just the structure is left. Okay, so in order for them to have done a demolition on this trade center.
Yeah, humor us. What would have been the scenario for them to have done that demolition and gotten away with it and kept it a secret? And I
don't know. The Martians would have had to come do it.
This is better than the Wizard of Oz and Peter Pan put
together. Absolutely,
yeah,
because it takes many, many months to do a reasonably sized building. And to do a 110-story building, it's going to take a lot of time.
And this all started with a guy who was a demolitionist who was watching this happen, and he just made the comment that this looks like a job that he does.
Well, does he mean he looked at the rubble and it just looked like a
He watched
like the result
it fall,
of it?
And it looked similar
to
the way...
Did he watch a few minutes earlier when the planes actually crashed?
Yeah,
What did they say about the fact that we all saw the planes?
He wasn't saying that. What he was saying was simply that, wow, look at that. That looks like a demolition.
Oh, so he wasn't even...
No, he wasn't saying it is.
Throwing it out of, okay, so somebody heard his words...
Exactly.
Right, and took it out of context.
Right,
yeah.
And kind of like the way Jefferson's words about separation between church and state were taken out of context. Okay.
Right, so if you want to use just a little bit of logic and common sense, no one has ever seen the results of an airplane flying into a building and it collapsing. Okay, so nobody knew what one would look like.
Yeah.
Right? So we just found out what it looked like. It looks somewhat like a demolition.
Yeah, sure it does.
So that's all we found out there.
Now, I saw a documentary, and I don't know if you could comment on this, Steve, that said that it was really due to the good engineering of the building that it even fell the way it did. Because when you think about it, if the World Trade Center had just fallen over lopsided after the planes crash, can you imagine the havoc and destruction that would have caused?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's all this stuff about, well, weren't these things built so that they could withstand planes? Well, you don't build buildings thinking planes will crash into them.
Well,
certainly not a luxury airliner. They do?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the nuclear plants that we designed all had in a design criteria this Boeing 747.
Thinking of terrorism or just thinking that there's an accident?
Yeah, thinking of an
accident.
That's
true. It's a skyscraper. Yeah, right. This is New York City.
So we had that in our design criteria, 747s, nuclear plants. And what we call the Q part of the plant, or the quality-related part of the plant, had to withstand that. The other part is where the electricity is generated. Mm-hmm. We don't really care about that as much because that's not a nuclear or hazardous or quality or safety related area.
So would you say this was the credit to the designers that it fell the way it did? Or would you say that the fact that it fell at all means there was a problem in the design? I know that gets us off the conspiracy a little bit, but just for architectural interest.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that... that there was a problem with the building. I would say there was a problem with the pilot in the airplane. That's what I would say.
That he was a new pilot named Saheed, and not the pilot who had been there a moment ago. Okay.
He didn't know how to land.
We'll be right back. Problem. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burn down. If you wanted a guarantee, you should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric. License number 480539. WNS Electric.
Are you losing your hair? Fight back with Avacor. Now with Boost, which gives you visibly thicker hair with the first application.
I'm 20 years old and I've been losing my hair for 3 years. I started using Avacor and my hair stopped falling out. It's working.
Well, I'm 72 years old, and I can tell you honestly, I have a fuller, healthier head of hair now than I did when I was 18 years old. Avacor really worked.
Whether you're 20, 72, or any age in between, Avacor works. And Avacor with Boost will improve your hair's appearance the same day you receive your order. Call now and you can get 3 months of Avacor free with your order, plus a free gift from Avacor's hair care line of products. Call 1-800-478-5410. That's 1-800-478-5410. This is a limited time offer, so call right now. 1-800-478-5410. That's 1-800-478-5410.
Welcome back to News Talk 1170. This is Bob Siegel, Sharon Fichard, and her husband, Steve Fichard. He's been very helpful in our program, usually on the engineering side of things, but he's sharing some of his engineer expertise with us today to debunk these preposterous, and I know some of you believe it sincerely, and that's okay, but they are preposterous ideas about 9/11 that somehow the Bush organization, the Bush outfit organized it as a demolition, and Steve's telling us why these buildings really did fall from airplanes. And we had left off talking about the way the buildings had been designed to fall straight down. You saw it. This was an obvious, more as a problem with the plane crashing into the building than the building itself.
You know, when I was getting my hair done a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to the gal that was doing it, and she said, "What about those puffs of smoke? Did you notice that those puffs of smoke were coming out as though bombs were going off?" That was what, I guess that's what's on the websites that are talking about it being conspiracy. What do you say about that?
It was
that,
a bomb.
Steve?
It was called United Airlines. It was a big bomb with two wings on it.
Yeah. The puffs of smoke. Okay. So the collapse of this thing was, the mode was called a pancake, where one pancake falls on top of another. And yeah, theoretically, and according to all the research that everyone has done after this, the steel weakened, okay, and the structures, the columns weakened, and the thing started to come down kind of simultaneously, okay? So you had, let's say, 10, 15 floors above the point where it was weakened, sitting there, and all the steel getting weak, all of a sudden the columns buckled, and the thing started to come down, okay? So now you got all those floors coming down, and it hits a floor that doesn't want to move.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that causes some of the guys up top to start pancaking too.
Okay.
Okay. So now you have this kind of a house of cards thing where each floor now is impacting the next and the next and the next, and as this thing continues and builds upon itself, it gets up ahead of steam that makes a locomotive look like a toy.
Wow.
Because what you have is the impact load. It's not just the weight of the upper floors. It's now the impact load. You've got gravity working on this thing now, and every subsequent floor, the impact load's increased dramatically.
So it's pancake because floors are just stacking one on another.
Yeah,
now.
Just one on another, bam, 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 bam. And what you get now is as this thing is coming down, these floors are going at over 100 miles an hour. They're pushing out all the air in between floors. And remember, each one of these floors has got windows.
Right.
Okay? And they haven't been destroyed yet. They're destroyed when that next floor comes down on top of it, and it's blowing everything out the side. So it's like a balloon bursting, and everything in there is going to get squished out to the sides.
Interesting.
Yeah. So you're looking at the pulverized concrete from the floors above and from the floor that's getting pulverized right then and there. That's the big smoke that was coming out, big puffs of smoke. It wasn't smoke. It was pulverized concrete dust.
Which would look like smoke.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah. What about, this was another thing.
This
that,
was also at the hairdresser.
That Joy brought up, yeah. Yeah. Now, she said that the building, I'm not sure what it's called. There was a building, a small building next to the World Trade Centers that had
seven.
All this secret documentation in it that was conveniently destroyed.
Now, is Joy, your hairdresser friend, going to listen to the show today and learn something?
I hope so. I tried to talk to her a little bit about this, but I wasn't the engineer. So
well, we'll see what your hair looks like the next time you go to her if she does listen to the show.
It'll look like a bomb went off, too.
Right.
It usually does.
Now, that building, I think it was number seven, World Trade Center number seven. Basically, what happened to that is as the debris came down, as the tower came down, it was damaging other structures, other buildings in the area.
Right.
Okay. And with that building there, what happened is, so this maybe 40, 50-story building, okay? And as this thing came down, eventually it started to scoop out the structure, okay? If you remember what the Oklahoma City bombing looked like?
Yeah,
like
that
the whole side of the building was
right.
scooped out.
Yeah, we just kind of saw the skeleton of the building from
the exactly.
From
so it's the
view.
Same type of thing. It started to get scooped out, and the structure, the structural members there, were either destroyed or weakened. Okay, and then what happened is they had a long fire in that one. It was about a 7-hour fire, and that apparently, according to some, weakened some of the structure as well, and eventually that got into a failure mode where a piece here. Lost its load-bearing capacity, so it failed, and something fell on top of it. And then when that happens, the loads that thing used to carry get transferred to something else, and then to something else, and then to something else. It's another house of cards.
Right.
It's like a domino effect
right.
with this three-dimensional, you know, grid of steel. And eventually, the whole thing just went down because everything was scooped out, and it just, boom, down to the ground.
And made quite a mess. I was going to say the privilege, for want of it, wasn't a privilege, but it was an awesome experience in kind of a gripping, heart-wrenching way. I was out there 1 month to the day of 9/11, practically, because I was scheduled to be in New York, and the smoke was still coming up, and we saw that debris, and when you were there, you couldn't imagine that anything like the World Trade Center that even looked like it had been there. It was just amazing, and it's interesting to hear these explanations about how this debris was compiled the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now there's this mysterious white plane that was flying around the site.
Ah,
is
Maxwell Smart? What's it?
Flight
9/11 white plane theory.
And the conspiracy theory is that white plane was a military plane that took the other one out 93 out of the sky.
93, the Pennsylvania plane.
Yes,
that they took them out.
Yeah.
Now, according to that theory, that plane would be taken out because we'd know that hijackers were on it. But aren't these guys also trying to tell us there weren't really hijackers? I mean, wouldn't
good
that
good point?
Wouldn't that? I'm just asking dumb, bonehead questions here. But I mean, the whole idea behind this is that we didn't really have any terrorists.
Well, you're looking at the conspiracies behind the conspiracies. Aren't
exactly.
You? Yeah, there's
well,
a chain reaction.
There's also little things like Osama bin Laden and Al Qaeda have admitted they did it, have bragged about the fact that they did it.
But they're just bragging.
Now, this is something Sharon and I talked about last week. There was all kinds of cell phone chatter, and we have operators from the cell phone companies. We have recordings. The people on the Pennsylvania flight knew what was going on. That's why they took over the plane from the terrorists. And there's, I guess, according to one of these theories, cell phones can't operate that high up.
Yeah.
Steve,
an
engineer, could you comment on that one?
Well,
and
as
then
a pilot,
you can comment
I can tell you.
Well, they
the
had these little
later.
Air phones that the planes used to give us before we had our own cell phones. Those were going to work. And why do they instruct us to turn our... See, I'm not an engineer. I just ask dumb questions. Why do they tell us to turn our cell phones off if they're not going to work at that altitude anyway?
We probably want to get a Qualcomm engineer to answer that 100%. But... No, cell phones work up in the air. The only problem...
Unless it's Verizon.
That
doesn't work anywhere.
The only problem that we ever saw with cell phones as we flew was the fact that you're so high that you're broadcasting like 10 different cell stations at the same time.
So five
and that kind of
mixes
up their computers down there. They don't know where to send the signals.
Yes.
So that was the thing. And my understanding, I've got a lot of friends that are airline pilots, and what their response to that is also... No, they just didn't want you to do it, and when the Nintendo stuff and so forth started to interfere with the avionics in the airplane, which no one has ever really seen happen, where you have to keep everything turned off up till 10,000 feet, the same thing.
And air traffic control probably doesn't need more problems than it already has. And
no,
especially if you're flying on continental, you really don't want to confuse
I need clarification. Are you saying that Nintendo games interfered with the avionics?
That's what the theory was, is that there was some kind of interference with the avionics. But the avionics don't really know whether it's on the ground or up above 10,000 feet or at 10,000 feet.
Hey, I saw that in Airplane 2. A little kid walked in and he took over the computer screen, thought it was a video game, and blew up a real plane.
Yeah.
So.
But I'm kind of, you know, at the limits of my expertise on avionics and, you know, interference. But as far as the white jet, this is a very common thing to have happen. The air traffic controllers and the pilots work together in a really good way. It's nothing like a freeway where everybody's mad at each other and trying to run each other off the road. In the air, everybody is wonderful. Everybody's in a great mood. And everybody treats each other with incredible respect and will do just about anything for each other. It's really nice, especially when you're doing it instead of driving. It's really nice.
No big trucks pull you off the road either.
No. I mean, they'll even take the 747s out of your way if need be.
Wow.
We've had that happen. So it's really nice. It's a great system. And what happened here was the white jet was actually a Falcon 50, okay, or Falcon 20. Okay, we actually have one of these over at Gillespie Field. And it's a real nice three-engine jet, awesome thing. And these guys were flying into Johnstown Airport, which isn't far from where the crash site was. And they were on approach, and the air traffic controllers asked them if they would go and take a look at that, circle, that area.
Okay, let's put a hold on this story until we get back. Our guest, Steve Koshard, Sharon's husband, talking about debunking the myths of 9/11. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
How many times have you heard the phrase, "they're all the same," applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home, or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
Hi, Tony Gwynn here with a message for the hardworking San Diegans who build, service, or supply local new homes, office buildings, and retail centers. You should be very proud. What you do every day helps build community. It really matters. It matters to the first-time home buyer who realizes a lifelong dream. You matter to the kids in the new schools that results from the homes you build. And to the co-worker who gathers each day at the office building you created. You matter to the drivers who use roads your project created or improved. On behalf of all San Diegans who enjoy these facilities every day, allow me to say thank you. Because you don't just build, you build community. 165,000 San Diegans work in the building industry. To protect these jobs and support our community, go to proudtobuildcommunity.com. Together, we can ensure a bright future for all of San Diego.
Welcome to News Talk 1170 KCBQ. This is Bob Siegel, Sharon Koshard, and Steve Koshard. Steve is a pilot and an engineer, and he's been talking about 9/11. If you've just joined us, debunking the 9/11 myths. Why don't you give a brief recap?
Let's see. So the white plane was a Falcon 20, private jet, three-engine jet, awesome jet. And the air traffic controllers in the area had, they were coming, well, let's put it this way, the airplane was going on final approach for a landing at Johnstown Airport in Pennsylvania, not far from the crash site, Flight 93. And air traffic controllers asked them if they would go take a look. So they got down around 3,000, 4,000 feet, changed course, went out, took a look, and said, yep, we see a big hole, and it's smoking.
Oh, so the white plane didn't even get there until that plane had crashed.
Yeah, the plane had already crashed, right. Yeah. Yeah.
But the theory is that the white plane was somehow the Air Force bringing that plane down.
Right, yeah, the theory was that the white jet was, you know, a part of the conspiracy. So they circled a few times, and from my understanding, they got down to about 1,000 feet above the site, and, you know, just to make sure, and said, yeah, it's a crater, it's smoking, and that was about it. They went and landed. And that was
The real ironic thing here is that if we knew that already three planes had crashed, two into the World Trade Center and one into the Pentagon, and then there was another one that was headed for, they believe, either the White House or the House of Representatives, which wouldn't have been, never mind. We wouldn't even go there. I mean, it wouldn't have been a bad idea for the military to shoot it down. If they knew it was going to come down anyway, then you save. And so even if the military was going to do that, I think that probably would have been a responsible thing to do. But as it happens, that's not what they did.
No, but that's an interesting thing you bring up, Bob, and that is that since 9/11, when an emergency or, you know, something suspicious happens on an airliner, the pilots radio air traffic control and let them know that. And then they get an escort of a couple F-16s or F-15s, whatever kind of aircraft they want to send up there. And some people feel as though that's a very reassuring thing. But that's not what they're there for. They are there to shoot down the airliner. That is why they're there.
But, you know, and I fly all the time, but what else are you going to do? You're going to let them hit their designated target?
Yeah, absolutely not. You have to make decisions like that. You're going to be like Flight 93, and you're going to take control one way or another.
Exactly.
They're going to shoot you down, or we're going to...
Exactly.
We're going to kill the guys on board or whatever we have to do.
I should say, by the way, those people on Flight 93, and I know we only know a little bit about what happened, that is one of the bravest things I ever heard of human beings doing. I just get a lump in my throat every time. If I'm ever in a situation like that, I would just have to pray to God that he would give me the courage to do what those people did. It was fantastic.
You know, as far as the validity of what I've been talking about with the jet and air traffic control, Sharon and I, we fly all over Southern California. And during fire seasons and even in the off season, we're constantly reporting fires, air traffic control. We were up in L.A. coming down to San Diego, and we were around Camp Pendleton and saw smoke around the Black Mountain area. And, you know, I'm listening on the radio. Nobody's talking about it. And we have friends that live right at the base of Black Mountain. And I waited and waited and waited. And we got pretty close, and I realized, you know, that really is Black Mountain on fire. So I radioed air traffic control and said, you know, we got a fire on Black Mountain on the southeastern part, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is our position and so forth. They asked us to circle.
So you were the first one to,
yeah,
to spot
yeah.
it. Wow.
And Sharon got on a cell phone and called her friend on the ground and said, we're right above you. There is a fire in your backyard.
Wow.
And so she ran out the door.
Black Mountain was looking blacker than...
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Sharon, just for the record, your cell phone worked while you were up in the plane?
Right.
Yes, it did.
Good point.
I just want to make that abundantly clear.
That's
to
right.
Our
cell
audience.
Phones do work.
Oh, well, yeah, at that altitude, sure. But you know, I'm sure people can always say something. But.
Yeah. So that type of thing happens all the time. And the pilots of the Falcon 20 were doing the same type of thing that we were doing, and the pilots do all the time. So it's not an unusual thing.
I was on a website called Scholars for 9/11 Truth last weekend, Bob. When
you surf those websites
looking
like people surf waves in Hawaii.
That professor from Wisconsin, Kevin Barrett.
Yes,
yeah.
You brought him up the other week on our program.
Yeah, and then they had a top 10 list of why the hijacking why it was fake, why it could not have been true.
Oh, okay, let's go through this. Let's hear
Steve's
comment. The first one, Steve, is
the names of all the hijackers do not appear on any passenger manifest list.
Really?
Yes.
You mean they might have used fake names?
Yeah.
Terrorists using fake names? Get out.
Here's the next one.
You're going to make a convert out of me to this.
None were subjected to autopsy.
Oh, okay. Now I've already admitted that I'm not an engineer.
Is this real? No, it's
and
real.
I've admitted
real?
That I'm not a pilot. I'm also going to admit that I'm not a physicist. But when a body blows up, you can't do an autopsy, can you?
Okay, here's another one. 5 to 7 of those who were supposedly the hijackers are alive and well and living in the Middle East today.
And
to
they
talk
know
about
that. How exactly?
Don't know.
They heard a chant to Allah, and that's how they know. Is
that, oh, is speaking that? Of chants, I'm not going to go through all of them because I didn't get them all written down, but here's one that you'd be interested
Darn,
in,
I really
Bob.
Was looking forward to hearing all 10 of these. These are fun.
This is the last one. Well, before that chant one, the other one was they could not have flown the planes. It just was absolutely preposterous.
Except that we have records. We have the people in the flight schools who taught them the flying lessons, who even told us they didn't want to learn how to land. They just wanted to learn how to fly them, which I would think would make a flight instructor suspicious.
It did.
But they did tell us about this.
Do you know what? It did make them suspicious, by the way, but they didn't do anything about it because it was politically incorrect
well,
to do anything
about it.
Well, of
course, these guys were all tipped off by the FBI a long time ago anyway, and lawyers threatened to sue them. And I mean, we could get into the politics of this, but the men existed. We know they existed. This is just the Bush hating. See, I believe that if we had a Democratic president in office, none of these conspiracy theories would have even popped up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Okay. So the tape recording of the hijackers saying Allah Akbar, a Muslim scholar reported that when faced with imminent death, the hijackers would have said, there's but one God, Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. They wouldn't have been saying Allah Akbar. They would have been saying, there's but one God, Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. So that's an...
So they weren't that, good Muslims.
In fact, that was the top number one reason why they couldn't have been...
Number one. This yeah. is Letterman.
Yeah, the yeah, well, it sounds like it belongs on Letterman.
That was from scholars of yeah, 9/11.
And of course, the reason we know they're scholars, everybody, is they call themselves scholars. You understand that? They wouldn't call themselves scholars if they weren't scholars. So that was a scholarly top 10 list that you just heard.
Mm-hmm.
So one thought that I have, Bob, that doesn't really have a lot to do with the 9/11 engineering aspects or aviation aspects, but just from a professional point of view.
Right.
So here we have all these people that are looking at the evidence, various videos and, quotes of people here and there, and they come up with conclusions. And they kind of sift through all of this stuff and decide which ones they want to believe, which ones they don't. And it's interesting to me, most interesting to me, is the fact that we have people that are investigating these things that have incredible credentials. You know, these are the top people in the field, the structural engineering, the people from the AISC, the ACSI, all the alphabet organizations, the American Civil Engineering organizations and so forth. And these people are analyzing the stuff and looking at it and determining what has happened. Okay, they have access to the materials, they have access to the site, they have access to everything.
And we're presuming that they're going to give us objective data because of their expertise.
Yeah, and this stuff is not, when we do this kind of stuff, you don't just do it in a vacuum. There's other people checking your work.
Exactly.
Yeah, and in the nuclear field, there's many, many people checking your work.
Right.
For years to come. Geez, a thing I designed in 1978 for the Grand Gulf Station, nuclear station in Mississippi, I found was modified about 10 years later because they didn't think that I did a certain thing the way they wanted me to do it. And, that's the way it works. Things just keep getting reviewed over and over and over as criteria changes. But so here we have these incredibly educated, intelligent people working diligently at their craft. And the conspiracy people don't believe a word they say. However, they're willing to believe anybody else that doesn't have any background at all. And
Amazing.
That's the thing that gets me.
Can I make a comment about that? James Miggs from Popular Mechanics addressed that point, and he said in an interview that conspiracy theorists fall prey to the idea that the world is more organized than, in fact, it really is.
That's it. Now, there are some people with expertise that would still come up with a whacked-out theory. They'd be in the minority, wouldn't they?
Yeah, more than likely. The thing is whether or not you're really going to do it correctly and do it honestly. So, I don't know, maybe some of these whacked out guys have got a political agenda,
To the point where they're just so much blinding themselves by their agenda that they're skewing their own facts.
Sure. I mean, the only political things I ever saw when I worked with Bechtel Power was people trying to claw their way to the top, But nobody was trying to undermine, the safety of the nuclear plants.
Well, Steve, this was very stimulating. Thank you so much for joining us on our program. And we hope that, there's a lot of fields that Steve's interested in, music as well. He plays a mean saxophone. I have heard him.
He's in a big band called Downbeat for sale. They'll do gigs
so
for hire, I should say.
Of a building falling isn't the only beat that Steve knows about.
Yeah. Downbeat, the hottest big band jazz quartet in San Diego.
Great. Well, we'll have you on our show again, and it was nice for our audience to get to meet the other side of Mrs. Sharon Kusher.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks for the plug.
Okay. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Bob Siegel Show.
A few months ago, I filed for bankruptcy. Now I feel such a sense of relief. It's called a fresh start, and I know why. All my credit card debt and past medical bills have been wiped out to zero. I had the option of keeping my car, so I did. When the phone rings, I know it won't be a creditor. I'm debt-free. The law allowed me a second chance. Call Mark Miller at 619-574-0551. He's an attorney in Old Town San Diego. Or check out his webpage at debtwipeout.com. Everyone deserves a fresh start.
Get a fresh start. Call the law office of Mark L. Miller. They're a federally recognized debt relief agency, and they've helped thousands of San Diegans wipe out their debt by filing for bankruptcy. Call 619-574-0551, 619-574-0551, or on the web at debtwipeout.com. Everyone deserves at least one fresh start. The law office of Mark L. Miller, 619-574-0551.
Now that you've been in your home for a while, how's your quality of life? Prime One Mortgage wants to know how you're doing. Are you living paycheck to paycheck? Struggling to make your mortgage payment? Do you feel hopeless? Is your home life suffering? Could you use a breather just once in a while? We know that sometimes life throws you curveballs. That's why Prime One Mortgage has some great news for you. With Prime One Advantage, you can decide what your mortgage payment will be. That's right, you decide. We give you four different payment options each month, every month. Even if you think your situation is hopeless, isn't it worth a phone call to find out? Call Prime One Mortgage today at 866-5-NEW-LOAN. At Prime One Mortgage and Realty, you can stop being a slave to your home and let your home equity work for you. That's Prime One Mortgage at 866-563-9562. And start enjoying life again. 866-5-NEW-LOAN. 866-563-9562.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to News Talk 1170 KCBQ. I hope you found that interview with Steve Koshard as refreshing as I did. Refreshing because he talked about 9/11 with actual facts. One of Steve's more interesting points is that people will ignore an entire community of professionals, pilots, architects, engineers, and instead listen to any blowhard who comes along with his own misguided ideas. It seems incredible that people can remain so ignorant when there are so many undeniable facts available. But this phenomenon can be explained far more easily than you would think, because the truth is, most people do not think. I didn't say that most people are stupid. I said that most people do not use the brains God gave them. Most people follow the pack and assume that what the majority believes must be right. It's not an overwhelming majority yet, but recent surveys show that some 45% of Americans are starting to accept these 9/11 myths. And for that reason, in certain circles, like a group of office workers talking around the water cooler, those myths are embraced by the majority. Keep in mind, however, that throughout history, the majority has been wrong far more often than right. There was a time, after all, when the majority embraced slavery. Let's face this. It is far too easy to repeat something fashionable or popular, something you heard at a cocktail party, or even something you heard from a college professor with an agenda who never got over the 60s and thinks that by protesting the Bush administration, he's still protesting the Vietnam War. And yet, these people contradict themselves. On one hand, Bush is some stupid country bumpkin with a low IQ, too incompetent to govern a country. On the other hand, Bush is a devious genius who puts the elaborate plans of James Bond villains to shame. After all, he got Al-Qaeda to play into his hands and admit to something they didn't really do. He also faked the records of air traffic controllers, produced videotape of planes flying into buildings that fooled every news network, produced hundreds of fake cell phone conversations from hostages on the airlines, and rigged the two buildings of the World Trade Center with explosives ripe for demolition without anybody noticing. If you hate Bush so much that you really want to believe he accomplished all that, at least have the consistency to stop calling him an idiot. That may have been devious, but it was not stupid. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.
When they were little, my kids used to ask me, "Daddy, where do people go when they die?" Well, I'd sit them down and try to explain our eternal nature and hope for a future life.